Are the microphones on? You might have to flip the switch on. On the panel. There you go.
Good evening, welcome to all to the planning commission meeting. This evening, February 25, 2020. We will start with a public comment portion of our meeting. Anybody has signed up for that portion of our meeting. Same time, we'll close that part of the meeting, move on to our scheduled items. Item number three, approval of minutes from our last meeting on February 28. And any comments?
Yes, I saw a couple of questions that excuse me. The first one was just a typo in that it was talking about when we were doing nominations. And where it says number two, appointment chair, vice chair. In the second paragraph, the third line, it says considering chairman of boards. That's all I like to think about that one. Then also, when we were talking about the fences, under item five, it said, number C, under item five, third sentence, C here added the intent of these fences was so that residents did not just have a solid wall of vinyl fencing. And I think that it's kind of misconstrued my intent of the statement, my statement, which was that the intent of having the 4-foot fences or open fencing was so that the walkers, not the walk, those who walk the trails, not the residents, would have a solid wall of like vinyl tunnel, and for the safety of the walkers, not so much residents. And that's been my own teaching.
Other comments? Minutes? Check your motion.
I move that we approve the minutes for January 28th meeting of the Planning Commission with changes as noted by Commissioner
Spear.
I'll second.
All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Yeah, motion carries. Move on to item four, which is review recommendation and public hearing on the concept plan for SWIG in the Gateway Commercial Project. I think maybe we ought to ask the staff first and then we can open it for we'll do the same on item five.
If I want to speak, jump up for a second. Okay. So I've got with SWIG, some representatives from SWIG we've been wonderful to work with. They are looking to build in the Gateway subdivision just east of Taco Bell that's there. So the current you're probably familiar with this subdivision right now, I hope. But you'll notice that lot 6 has now been carved off into a smaller lot 9 that's not on the is it, I believe the site plan, that is in your package, right?
Right.
You're going to look at that. Okay, so lot 9 is being carved out in the proposal right now. This is the SWIG. They've gone through a number of iterations of the site plan. Taco Bell opened last week. A bunch of fanfare and interesting decisions on parking. So let me be clear. Taco Bell is right now, but we're expecting that to taper off, and then we'll see what the actual impact happens. And as we do that, we'll see what needs to happen. But with that being said, as I've met with Swig on this piece, where the Taco Bell director comes in and then queues up heading back west, we wanted to make sure, we wanted to try to avoid a situation where the two drive-throughs queued up into each other. We didn't want that. That would be a nightmare. So there's a temporary access here that has to be removed. It's too close to this intersection, and it was always identified as temporary. But the Swig will access down here at the Bulger side of the line. So on this, it's a little bit wide, hard to read maybe, but this is 4700, this is 9980 out to North Campbell Boulevard. So currently pulling the Taco Bell in there, right there. On this, there's a temporary access point right here that you can pull through, but this would obviously have to change. So you can enter in here, queue up around the building, and exit out. That's the concept of that right now. I showed this to our public works building official, and there's just some questions maybe about walkability and the ADA, and making sure that there's a clear path to the building, which isn't easy to address. I don't think that's an issue at all. But as a concept plan, keep in mind that we're looking at this in a very high level sense, right? So they provided a lot of information on the concept plan. Let's look at the proposed elevations. This is the change that we're trying to happen. These were sent to me yesterday, I believe. So you see, this is a small stick frame building with a brick veneer on the outside. Sorry, you can see this brick part over here. It's a thin brick, but it's a brick nonetheless. You see this vintage wood material. With some aluminum and then some copper steel. But the building itself is fairly small. How many square feet? That's 550 square feet. So very small. So with that being said, the concept of looking at very high level giving direction as we move forward and further. And preliminary is where you'll see the storm break, the grading, the engineered site plan. That's not ready for the plan, so that's why we're on your memo, there's two motions. There's one for concept approval, there's one for preliminary recommendation. I'm going to ask to table preliminary recommendations. That wasn't supplied enough to do anything with it, so we'll get it next meeting. But we are looking for some feedback on that concept plan.
On the drawings that were sent earlier, it said flow brick. So what you're talking about now is an actual masonry, but a thin brick.
It's a thin brick. So there's one that was sent out to. We've talked about this. I've had this conversation with them because there's material that they presented that was a faux brick.
I'm thinking grandma's kitchen.
Yeah, maybe one. I don't know. But I told them make it brick. So it's brick. The last iteration I saw. So ignore this foam brick material, it is a brick. It's a little longer. A thinner brick, but it's brick nonetheless.
Which is a lot better than ours. Any comments?
I had the same. I gave him that feedback a month ago. Do you want to talk about the site plan or the elevation? What questions do you have?
We have to do a public hearing.
Okay, let's do a public hearing.
Your presentation. Open up for just a moment if there's anything here who wants to address this proposal. We'll move on to questions from the commission.
All right. First of all, in the packet that I've got, it does not show the drawing around being the same.
Yes, that was submitted 2 days ago. So we've got that number. Let's go over the concept plan. There have been a number of iterations on the drive-through. No, we're good. And they've been really receptive to the feedback, just given the constraints that this poses of having the two drive-throughs situated in a way that we don't want them backing up into each other or one leading into the other. So imagine the Taco Bell here, right? One iteration had the pulling in, and there's like almost a circle around the building.
that was interesting, but I didn't think, given the neighbors, it would work very well, and there's another iteration that pulled it this way and makes it out towards the top of it all. So my suggestion then was holding this way, but see if you can exit out away from the top of it in a manner that it doesn't hit their queue. So this is the current proposal. All right, go ahead.
So as lot 9, it kind of exits out onto lot 6 then?
Yes. It would exit out lot 6, it'd be the same owner, but let me go back. Let's talk about something else here. Because lot 9 doesn't exist on plat as it's currently approved, right? So we've done something. We always try to find ways to, as a city, I want the developer correctly. I want to assist them in any way we can to get their product, their services to the residents, right? So with the Gateway subdivision, one thing that we did that we've never done before is we let them simultaneously build the public improvements, the street, curb, gutter, utility infrastructure. We let them build those simultaneously with the building, right? And that's why the Taco Bell is opening, so you'll probably see road work happening. We split off the Taco Bell portion, deeded just that, and they bonded that portion and set that into what's called durability, where those public improvements are deeded over to the city, and they have to last for 1 year. And the bond that's posted to the city is in the amount of 10% of the value of those improvements. The city holds that bond for 1 year, and if those improvements deteriorate, pull that bond and use that money to do the improvements. Right? There's still some improvements that have not been bought anymore, so we've done this in different phases. Taco Bell, Taco Bell with this portion of the road was called phase one. The rest of the subdivision is phase two. Phase two hasn't been bought before. But the agreement that we have with these developers is because I want to be I want to help them. At the same time, I want them to be held accountable. So there's kind of a fine balance they have to walk. So we told them, you will not get a CFO for the Taco Bell or the storage facility until the associated public improvements are done. Meaning, I'm not going to let you build these two things simultaneously and then ignore the public improvements, quickly build your Taco Bell and open it up, and then ignore the public improvements going on. Like, in order for your Taco Bell to open, they have to go through a punch list and bond when the improvements there. Now, the storage units almost, you know, the public improvements associated with it are almost done. I told SWIG that, they couldn't get a certificate of occupancy for those buildings until we're public improvements for them, nor would we do final approvals for other developments in the Gateway subdivision as well as SWIG to keep their pressure on them to get those done. For the city, that's one of our main concerns, is getting this all finished. Right? So, inform SWIG that we'll move through the concept plan, we'll do the preliminary reviews, but if we get to the point in the final stage of approval, and these improvements haven't been done, everything arrives to a halt. Right? So, going back to your question, yes, lot 9 is not in existence now, but as we go through this process, if that's the way that they want to present their subdivision, that's what they do. Yes, lot 1 and lot 6 have multiple buildings that are leased, kind of like what we did at Camden M Source, or you can carve off a separate piece of what they're proposing to do this thing from create lot 9. But lot 9 can't be approved until everything else is done in subdivision.
And there's access and exit on lot 6 to the 9930?
Yes, there'd be access here into SWIG, and then here into the SWIG. So there'd be access onto the site without having to go into lot 6 there.
Okay, so are they going to exit this lot on 47, or are they going to be able to exit on 930?
Both.
Okay.
Both. So if I pull in, I turn around here, I go through the drive-through, right? I can then turn and go this way out towards Cedar Hills Drive or south to 99 North, or I can turn west and go back out to our Federal Park.
Okay. Well,
So there should be full, there should be full access.
We've got to change, but I'll bring it along.
Okay.
Right.
One other thing, this, I still, we'll still want to talk about parking, but this one does show more parking than the initial concept plan that was proposed.
That was definitely a question I had. Looked like there were three employee stalls.
Yeah.
We had three employees that were on the space.
I mean, if this is, if we're going to encourage people to sit down with tables and umbrellas, I think it needs to park.
But there's no seating indoors?
No.
Not at all?
There's none. And what was the number, how much of your traffic?
About 95% of our business is done through the drive-through, about 5% walk-up. Here we anticipate a little bit more being in high school right across the road. But that's about the distribution.
So you do, there's like the walk-up service available?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's why the concern, the, if you have the ADA parking here,
yeah,
and
right.
You have your sidewalk, then how do they enter or order? Because there's a, you know, two tank in our building, which we're going to check on the building for the same two tanks. But I'm assuming that if you, is it an order window or do you want
to
say?
Yeah, it's an order window. If you actually go to the elevations, it's actually on the side facing west of the, right there, so just scroll that.
Well, you don't actually enter the building.
You don't, you just walk up.
So there. That's otherwise that's facing the
top. It's also a different window from the vehicular.
Right. So the vehicular one would be a. That's the capital.
Yeah.
So driving it down here past there. The walk up is just around the corner. You get
the walk up. That the walk up would be on this elevation.
It makes it smaller to both of those.
I have another question. Not that I mind this elevation of material, but just like how colonial and how close to the off-field that this matches with our color. Because that's a good factor to me.
Not from both, not from the other.
That's true. It's true. It's
not in Perth.
Perth doesn't have any on the corners.
In most cases, and this is a good time to give feedback, but in most cases, the real elevations aren't approved in the zone preliminary. So,
okay.
But the fact that we have elevations here,
right.
It's just kind of.
I do like that they went with the real brick.
Yeah, that's
the answer. I don't have an issue with the thickness of the brick, the thickness of the brick, or real more. I just think that it needs to be rock up and depend on the building.
It's just like the brick. So my, I've seen some soda stand type businesses didn't have 15 or 20 cars wrapped around them.
They did?
Yeah, I mean, they drive through.
I've seen it too. So also, part of the preliminary plan is that they were located in traffic, not to demonstrate the traffic space.
And the reason I bring it up is because last night at 10:45 or so, I went to our new Taco Bell, and there were cars, you know, around out onto the access road. It wasn't the 14800, but they were wrapping around that tight U right there to get into the drive-thru. And if there's significantly more cars, there's got to be a better management plan than what we're seeing now. So
I see that. And so I'm really interested to see what happens with Taco Bell over the course of the kind of exists. Used to being here, right? So I'm not going to say this is the usage going forward. I think we can take it off of most places here. But that's why I do like the concept here that it does keep the issue away from the top of the comes in here, then down. There's no keys up here. And,
I would just say, though, we also learned that today. You were there at 10:45, right? We were there at 11:30 in the morning because we wanted to get back to high school, okay? And we couldn't turn onto the road. We were still on our drive when we were trying to get into that street just so. And we couldn't because the park, the drive-thru.
This is good, this is good.
The queue to drive-thru was still fit, that was all along this road.
This is temporary, so we can go reach out, I can reach out to Taco Bell and say, please put some crowds out now, go down this.
Yes.
All done, just temporary, while we have this time for that, let's just utilize that.
Either way, it's still a little awkward, because you could go around the loop from the parking lot, a lot of people are just taking that view and trying to get right in the queue, right? And there's not turning lane.
This is a public road, so they can put cones there, block it all they want, that's private access, that's what I say. All we have is high demand initially, because without it, down that temporary access.
If they're quick and the booth, they're not calling, probably they could get.
We hope it does.
No.
What I saw was the people trying to go into the other lane, move up past lot six, and come in, and go coming from.
Cutting in line?
That, yeah, coming down there, going to the park, because there was no park.
Oh, there's a park, okay, yeah.
So.
I've had conversations with another parking.
Yeah.
So, on this drive here, I need them to put some parking inside. Yeah, one block. Employee stuff for the village.
Just one thing I wanted to add about the drive-thru and the queuing is that a couple things are unique about Suede is that they have an incredibly low time to order. So we're about a minute 20 to a minute 30 as far as actually eating and cooking. But at the end of the day, we're not doing any food prep here. So it's just soft drinks and cookies. So we can get people through very, very quickly. Another thing that we do is we do line busing. So if anyone's familiar with Chick-fil-A, while you're sitting in the parking lot that I have, that's actually exclusively happening in orders. So doing that, it gives us the ability to go out in the queue line and be more efficient. So between that and the lower queue time, we can actually get a lot of cars through our drive-thru very, very quickly. On average, and again, being that we are a Suede, we do have certain locations where at times the line is very, very long. But on average, we have about 5 to 6 cars in the drive-thru. Right now, we're showing 7 as far as how much preliminary plan. So we are optimistic about the fact that we have cars going through this very, very quickly.
Can you just, because we're recording this, can you say who you are?
You bet. Sorry about that. My name is Aaron Smith. I'm with Four Foods Group. Four Foods Group is a little information on Four Foods Group. We're a locally owned restaurant development company. So located here in Lehigh. We have about 100 locations over 9 states. So the 3 concepts that we are building predominantly right now is Suede, Mobetta's, and R&R. We're also looking to acquire 2 or 3 different other concepts. So we're trying to find cities that are business friendly that we can, you know, not only bring one concept to your city, but multiple. That's it. You guys expound your commercial zone here a little bit for me. Maybe we could use some more. So
under this proposal is who owns the?
So the building is owned by us, and actually that's not true, so sorry. So typically when we build these, we've actually switched to a model where we build them out of shipping containers, and we actually just do the footing foundation and we set them on there. Due to some of the design requirements here in Cedar Hills, we decided to stick right in this building. So in that case, Nathan Ricks, the owner of this development, will own that building. It's just a brown lease from them. So we do not own the, like, so in the event that we can carve out that parcel lot 9, we won't be the owners, it'll still be the original owners. So that's really up to him whether or not he wants to subdivide them.
Okay, just a couple of quick comments. I don't mind the aesthetic as much. I look at this building, it's got this floor that's modern, aesthetic. Anyway, I personally never thought it was the colonial thing, if they were out of state, coming here around with that problem aesthetic. Yes, colors seem nice as well. With a thin drink, you're going to have to watch the details of the corners.
Yes.
Whoever's building it and how they're going to build it. The old drawings had a darker material on the corners, which is often a better way to terminate those materials instead of trying to bring them together.
Absolutely.
That's where your building starts to chip off.
The only comment I had on the aesthetic, which again, we're not approving that tonight, so it's just there, but. I understand why, but there really aren't any windows there. And I understand why, but it does make it look a little boxy from the outside. I hesitate to say, you know, put in fake windows and maybe it'll look a little prettier, but you don't want people coming up to the front order, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The hard thing about a swing, we've had other cities tell us the same thing. They're like, you have more windows or fenestration on the front of it, and we can absolutely do that. But the problem is that this has been strategically designed, so it's just operationally, it works very, very well.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we're doing this in Logan right now. We have 60% of the storefronts, but they want to be windows. The concern with that is that you're looking into an operation business. You're not looking into a dining room or a restaurant. So we can do anything. It's just what is, you know, the spirit of the law, I mean, you know,
if you put windows in it, I think the way it would be false windows, it's not like it's a fancy
window,
just
or do higher windows around the top to make it.
And that's possible. Light. Yeah, so you're not looking at the back of refrigerators or stuff.
I mean, we're talking about something that's from here to the walls, right?
It's
there.
Very small. It's
exactly.
Very small.
Yes, thank you for dimensioning that, because that's about it, as big as it is. Yep, yeah, you're right. But yes, I mean, that's absolutely a possibility, especially now that we're stick framing this location.
Sure.
If we wanted to add some windows along the top, we could absolutely come.
Which direction is the walk-up window?
On the west.
It makes sense to talk about, right? On this side. West side.
And then the only comment on that would be making sure that we have, I mean, at lunchtime,
yeah,
with the high school,
I, you know,
there will be a lot going on right there. The students walking as well.
We're gonna do a walk and skate lunch initiative with the high school.
Most of them will want to give up an RV place on the way, though.
But the big lead driver is not cold. I don't know if they have to follow the lunch break to them. I talked to the mayor about this because I didn't talk about this. You know, it was a lot going on. And on Saturday night, I went over to the was an American Fork and got in there for lunch. But they're all well, they don't have any option of changing it, and they're moving tenants. And so I like our position that we have one, we can see if there's an issue here. That's going to address it going forward because we have the space we have, but it's not all in. We can make these accommodations since we didn't have these conversations. Anyway, what other questions can I answer about the concept?
Sure.
Yeah.
I can just make one more comment too on the queuing. As far as on the queuing, I just wanted to let you know that historically what we've seen is that we are actually busiest on off times. So we don't have a big morning rush or lunch rush. We're actually in between morning and afternoon because when everyone starts to fall, you get a little caffeine kick, and then in between lunch and dinner. And so a lot of the big box, you know, tenants where we're in the development like that really like our use because we're opposite of what most of their traffic is with the development. So also something.
Further questions or comments on all that?
All motion. I move that we approve the concept plan for Gateway Plat A, Lot 9 subdivision, located approximately 9980 North, 4700 West.
I'll second the motion.
Any further discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Yes, we do. I move that we table the preliminary approval of the preliminary plan for this plan. Preliminary plan for Gateway 5A, Lot 9 subdivision located at approximately 9A North, 4700 West.
Second.
I'll second.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Both then? We'll move on to our next review and public hearing for approval of the Reinhardt Land Subdivision 5B, located at approximately 10,004 Road North, 4800 West, in our SC1 commercial zone. We'll go to staff first, and then entertain any new public comments.
All right, so this one's a really unique subdivision for us. So let me give some context. Whenever somebody subdivides, one of the basic requirements is that they have to do these frontage improvements of the property. They need a curb, better sidewalk, asphalt, the utility work, everything this judgment. Yet in the case of this subdivision, all done. So,
minus the sidewalk.
Minus the sidewalk. That's it. That's why I see all there's a caveat there. Anyway, Cedar Canyon finished this half of the road as part of their agreement. It's going to be on this river that ultimately develops this land to repay the city for that cost because it's their frontage improvement requirement. And then Cedar or Gateway has finished this portion and this corner here. They did all those improvements. Right? So this is a little island, right? The park's sitting right here. Curb gutters all the way around. Sidewalk is around 75% of it, not along the front right here. So they're asking for a subdivision, but they're not asking for any buildings. So that's why we can do a concept and preliminary right now because there's not an associated building with the parking lot that we need a storm rate count for. We're just carving up a piece that they can then go lease or sell or whatever they need to do. The one part of the improvements that needed to be done was the sidewalk, as was mentioned. The sidewalk along 4800 West. We want to encourage our walking initiative with high school students, right? So we want to give them a safe route to Taco Bell. And this sidewalk here is one piece that's missing. So right now, to build, we need to put sidewalk in. The only issue with the sidewalk is, and I don't think it's an issue, it's just something that needs to be brought up, is that it's not a straight sidewalk. When Rocky Mountain Power installed these power poles along 4800, they did not do them in a way that's parallel to the road. It's just slightly off, right? So this is the first power pole that is in the way of the sidewalk. So we're asking for a little meander there, and then a gateway, the two power poles that are in the gateway subdivision, or even more, they were, I think that one was about right here, and the next one was just right at the center of the sidewalk. So we approved some meanders around that, just given the cost of moving those big power lines was prohibitive. It was very expensive. So yeah, that's the only caveat, that this is just a general sidewalk. That's the one piece of engineering that that the city requested for this subdivision because there's not any buildings going. So we're not asking for storm drain, we're not asking for traffic counts. This gives them the ability to go market this piece in a way that.
So there's not going to be any curb cuts or anything?
Not at this time. No. It's a good question, though. In the future, when. So let's say that Fort Hoodoo's finds a slot where they really attract more and bring in another client. Then we look at the position of the building, we look at where the curb cut needs to go in, and there be as part of that building's approval, there would be a site plan where maybe where an old curb cut is and where the new curb cut is going to go and where the new improvements will be. There will be a storm drain count there, there will be a traffic study then. That's when we'll see your utility, because the utilities on the utilities for this piece are all running up this road right here. So they're all there. So it's really just a matter of where you stuff them in, but you don't stuff them in until you know where your building is going to be.
So maybe before we get too far into questions and comments, I need to at least ask if there's anybody here or the public who would like to comment on the proposed development. I'll get on the side now. Seeing none, we'll close that part. And go back to the commission for any questions or comments.
Well, I think to me it's a big old elephant. This is a very unusually shaped lot now.
It is, but it's actually, the size-wise, it's almost 2 acres. So, I mean, for context, let's
hop back to this.
We have Google Earth.
Yes.
Okay. So the northeast.
Yes, so you're 1.93 acres here. And the northeast half?
That way, yes. Are we potentially looking at having two different tenants on that? Having somebody locate up there and somebody else on the lower portion? Because if it's one building, you can't straddle that.
So you can't straddle it.
park up there.
Well, yeah, there may be more room here. I will never.
I mean, you would want
to
show the
ability to be creative in this. Yeah. Yeah, but no, you've got a good point. I think that some of the context here, the way I understand it, is that Reinhart Oil sold parts to a Canadian firm a couple years ago, but they retained ownership of their land assets. So this is probably guessing to divide those assets from what they own.
I can comment to that a lot.
Please do.
Introduce yourself.
That David Peterson with the Excel Engineering is representing David Jarnot tonight. So essentially, the Hearts, we wanted to separate the Hearts gas station and its remaining property. The main primary purpose of the subdivision is to separate off that legally so that in some time in the future they can actually develop on this other parcel. I actually have done some layouts on this little locker room, little piece there. And there's room to put a little office building or something else there. So it's developable, I guess.
It's one part. Years ago, I heard when Reinhart said Hearts would add a car wash there. So I'm guessing that is not planned.
Currently, that's not something they're planning to do.
Okay.
Maybe that is something they actually looked at and decided not to do it.
They were allowed to talk about that, but that should be some context that they're able to put something there. It may not be a car wash, but.
Other questions, comments? Seeing none, we'll entertain a motion.
Okay, I'll move that we approve the concept plan for the Reinhart subdivision located at approximately 140 north, 440 minutes west.
I'll second.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. We have a second motion.
No.
That's it for that.
Yeah. There's two.
I move that we recommend the preliminary plan for the Reinhart subdivision located approximately 140 north, 4800 west, subject that's to
further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Thank you very much.
Okay.
To type 6, discussion on fences adjacent to public parks, trails, and certain main streets.
Okay, this is particular to the Planning Commission to address current fence controls 10/18, specific to special provision to fences adjacent to public parks, trails, and major streets. This is a continuation from a discussion felt back on last time commission on January 28th. Again, this is only a discussion item. I know public hearing hasn't been called for this related to 10/18. It hasn't been presented. There are some examples of code that we are going to present possible tonight to Planning Commission and request further input from Planning Commission on a direction that we can go as we evaluate the code. Any proposed code changes will be subject to Planning Commission and City Council. We'll go back and do a little bit of background on this again to kind of reiterate what we have already discussed. Mayor Reese previously requested that we address some of these changes to the language to this portion of code as it relates to parks and trails and major streets. As per discussion on last, residents have also expressed an ability to be able to do or fully closed or near their areas adjacent to these areas. Currently, we're not able to alter these standards without the appeal of a manager or his meeting. Many of these residents feel a lack of privacy and noise that is generated from patrons who are using these trails. Unfortunately, not all patrons are courteous. They will let their animals off the leash. They will enter into the backyards, unfortunately, of these homes, which causes possible nuisance for those or even safety issue for the child or another animal in the rear yard area. The other thing is they do defecate in these yards, and the patrons will not go after their animal. So those are some of the issues that have come up to zoning and code enforcement for these problematic in some of these areas. There's also a general feel of lack of safety. So if the privacy is, the patrons are using their backyard, or excuse me, the residents are using the backyard, the patrons are walking out, they can see what's going on in the backyard. And it's just that lack of security that they have. When they have an open fence, a 6-foot open fence or a 4-foot open fence. Staff is requesting the planning commission edit this portion or look at this portion and encompass a wider range of location of fences for residents that are specifically affected in these areas. One of the things that I did go through and look at specifically is so one of the areas that I'm going to focus most on is that area that is type B, is where all the segments of the trail are greater than 130 feet and less than 30 feet in length. So going through this, there's five specific areas. The first one is going to be this area right here, which is Morris Creek Trail. The second area we're going to address is this area, which goes from Sandalwood down to North Oak Grove North. The next area will be this area, which will be from Sandalwood or Joshua Lane down to Cottonwood Drive. The other area will be this area here, which comes off of 4600 West. This is Cedar Run right here, and then it'll connect to the Murdoch Trail corridor. The last one is a small area right in here, which technically is under that threshold of 130 feet buried by like half a foot. So, but we're going to talk about that and include that into our discussion as well. So I want to give you some examples of why this is really difficult to enforce, and property owners have the ability to do things to their back of their property. One of the things that I want to address is in our current definitions of our fences, and so keep this in mind as we go through this. For fences, under the definition of fences, is any constructed tangible barrier, latticework, screen, wall, or any continuous growth of shrubs, vines, trees, or any vegetative material. So keep that in mind as we're going through this, because you can see a lot of these aren't going to meet that criteria. So this is our first one. This particular area, this is the Orchard Place HOA. This is Harvey Boulevard going west. This is going around. The HOA changed their wall there, the entrance to their wall. This right here is at the end of that HOA, and this is at the beginning of the trail of Forest Creek Trail. So what this property owner did was he requested to have pools to be installed in his backyard. With the type
fence was there, he had to change his fencing and to be able to fully enclose that. If you look here, this was left there, but then he took that down, which we okayed him to do, but unfortunately he did that as is. We requested him to place that down. So if you go down at the beginning, that's this house right here. If you go further down, excuse me, this house here, go to the next house, that's what this house, and you can see what is happening as you go down this corridor. So homeowners along this trail, they have obscured these open tile style fences in a variety of ways. For example, this guy has built up this retaining wall that goes the full length of his property. But he's changed the actual elevation of this. If you go down to the next one, you can see these trees are on top. So it's lifted it up and then it sinks back down into his property. The next one as you go through, this one's a little bit more difficult to see. Right through here, there is lattice work. And this is one of the examples of pets that will get off leash and enter into the property. So property owners have done a number of things to try to prohibit that. The next one is on the west side of this thing, and they have included fabric screening all along their fence. So as we go through this, you can see there is a lot of alterations people are doing to, you know, make secure their backyard. This one has chicken wire as opposed to lawn. And if you go back to our definition, one of the items was vegetation. So this is very dense vegetation. Even in the wintertime, I couldn't even leave this property. I really can't tell you what's going on here. This what's that?
It's a batting cage.
Is it a batting cage?
No, no, it's a basketball court.
Is it basketball?
I think there's a basketball court there.
Yeah, there's something. But either way, there is this vegetation that's still obstructing. That's not see through at all. The other item that as you go further down is that they build up these berms. And on top of these berms, they planted the shrubbery. So you can see that the desire on this one as well for people wanting privacy. I mean, it's just, and this is only on this area from this point to this point. Those are the only pictures.
Well, when we go walking, that's part of our trip. And so I'm pretty familiar with that.
Okay.
The retaining wall area is very creative. They have a lot of that. And I have a lot of sympathies for homeowners there.
Yeah.
You do have to bear in mind, if you went 6 foot high with that satellite into that, it's exactly what we're trying to avoid. It's not wide.
Right.
It's just not wide there. You measured, it's not measured. I don't, I couldn't say
so,
100 feet.
I think
it's not very far.
An average. So from this point to here is about 1,000 feet. And I believe that
view shows it. And we can,
yeah,
you can see the fence on both sides.
You can see the fence on both sides. So it is a corridor. I believe the main thing that we were looking on is a safety issue.
It's a shame that I would much prefer that there be vegetation as opposed to just concrete walls.
Then somebody has to maintain it.
Exactly. If it's on the inside, it would have to be safe. And which is expensive, I get that. So this is tough. This is the one section of that whole trail that you know, a lot of others, there's probably a home on one side that's wide open and very wide on the other side. Right in that region, it's tough.
So I wanted to address this one first because it is a tough one. So the next area I want to look at is from this point to Sunset Park from here. Mm-hmm. Now, these particular homes in this area, you can see they're set farther back on the property. And there is a considerable distance.
Yeah.
So these are 5 acre lots versus 0.221 or 0.227 lots. And if you go off to the side, I know that you're aware of this, but that there is an embankment down here,
right,
and then the creek that runs through. The homes are on the opposite side of it at this point. Okay, so that's the one area we want to focus on. The next area would be the one on Saddlewood and Oak Road. So this particular one is 140 feet in length and 30 feet in width from here. Is this aesthetically pleasing?
This is across the street from where I live.
Yeah.
So I don't think this is a very fair comparison to the other pictures we looked at.
Okay.
I mean, these are two homes. I mean, this is a very, very short passageway. This isn't even having nearly the traffic that the Forest Creek Trail does.
This one also doesn't lead to an adjacent trail either.
No, it's street to street.
The city's, just on the aesthetics, the city's done a number of projects on this very piece over the years. I can speak to Parks and Trails is focused on this length of trail. There's a rock installation last year.
Right here,
it's actually on the very south end. Weeding it, cleaning it up, removing dead trees. This segment of trail has always been a work in progress.
The next area we're going to look at, this is Joshua Lane at Saddlewood Drive. So on this particular area, let me show you this map here. This would only affect two portions, which would be first this section right here and then this section. The rest is Cedar Hills. Fence and Cove wouldn't really fall into that category. But this one right here is that 137 feet, and then this one is 167.
So those pictures are actually the same trail.
It's
yeah.
The same trail.
It's
so
the top and the bottom of the same trail.
It is. So Joshua Lane is this. This one right here, Joshua Lane, and this one comes off of Cotton Road. So the trail actually
connects
to
it. If you build a fence on both sides of that trail, it would look like a corner.
I'm sorry.
It would be a long alley.
It would. Yeah, I totally agree. The next section I want to address is, this is the one that's down on 4600 West, and it connects to the Wardog Trail. This is the HOA in Temple Shadows. This was, I don't remember how old Temple Shadows is.
Mid-2000s.
It's been there quite some time. This fencing on the west side, that's AmeriCorps drinking water fencing. Particular to that, but like I say, this one does also fall into that category, 18 feet wide and 430 feet depth. So, but you can see the solid fencing on the east side of that trail.
My question is, what's the safety concern with having a fence, a tall, non-see-through fence? I don't
think it was from side lights, if somebody was jogging at night or some such. Just to take the other side so you can get it back. That's what we discussed last time.
But if you go underneath the tunnel through Murdoch, like all that closed in and somebody can hide down there too. I mean, there's. I would love to have a 15 foot fence around my backyard and no one could ever get in it, but I don't see that there's a substantial difference.
I'm not actually arguing that with you. I don't think that safety is a
very great concern there.
And I don't even think that aesthetics is either. I mean, these are, I mean, if it was, you know, made out of green fence stakes and barbed wire, it'd be something different. But I mean, these are normal construction materials, vinyl and iron or something. There's nothing kind of abnormal about it. Yeah. A 6 foot fence that you don't see through is fine almost everywhere. Even if the chair won't, you know, or something. Is there a code, like a state code about trails that prohibits this?
I'm not sure.
Well, the aesthetic issue with privacy is long times because of the continuous nature of the stuff.
When I was doing research on this, one of the possible options they had on this was to include vegetation or some type of trees or shrubberies as you go along with the solid type of fencing to break that bath. And that may be something we can look at as well.
As in requiring the homeowner to do it?
On which side of the fence?
It didn't specify.
See, if they do it on the inside of the fence, it's not helping the walkers on the trail side.
Oh, I mean, if you put it on the outside of the fence, then it's narrowing the open space from the trail.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
the width of the trail isn't, to me, is not a significant issue. The openness or lack thereof is the issue. If it's 30 feet or if it's 40 feet or 50 feet. If you put privacy fences 6 foot tall on both sides, a 30 foot wide trail or a 40 foot wide trail, it's still going to seem like an out.
I guess I have a problem because I'm 6 foot five, so if you put a 6 foot fence up, like I'd still see everything. So it's.
Not being as tall.
Part of the problem here.
And to be fair, I'm doing a lot of devil's advocate work here. I had a swimming pool in my backyard for almost 20 years. You have to have a privacy fence. I mentioned this last time. Couldn't get homeowners insurance related. So, you know, I understand, and I would not want people looking at my family garden, giving my kids in the pool and everything else, through an open fence. I get that. I also walk these trails. And when you're going down the one stretch where it's almost 1,000 feet, and the fence is along both sides, it's the part of the walk that my wife and I like the least. Because, gee, instead of seeing the creek and trees, it's vinyl. Or very tall basketball court netting with trees. It's just not as interesting or nice, as pleasant to walk down. Having said that, we do, and I don't care, we're just walking the property, so.
Let's go to both sides of this. I'm tending to lean more towards the rights of the property owner being able to use and enjoy their backyard. I know that there's a safety issue, but I think the issue, the disadvantage right now is more along these property owners than the aesthetic of the that's less of a disadvantage.
So, let me make a couple comments. We've talked about two reasons for this park. Number one, safety, and the other, the aesthetic. When I actually read it, there's no mention of a safety issue. And it seems, in our current climate, our current community, that safety doesn't appear to be the issue. So, it seems to me the way the code was, the intent of the code says, for the purpose of achieving a coordinated appearance and consistent quality of design and construction and such and so on. So it seems like the code was originally written with an aesthetic in mind. There may have been some discussion about safety or whatever, but my point is it's not my thought that we ought to turn this code into something that wasn't meant to be. So in my mind, safety is a community discussion, but it's not actually intrinsic to this code that we're looking at. So if this code was originally intended for aesthetic purposes, and it appears to me that that's the case, then we probably ought to be talking about it more in terms of an aesthetic. If we want to original intent was to create the aesthetic by allowing people on the pathway to have a broader vista or, you know, a nicer experience as they're walking down the pathway. We want to change that now because we have competing concerns to create people on the pathway and people on the homes. I'm personally more in line with what Laura's saying in terms of the rights of property owners and the privacy.
Right.
However, I'm also sensitive to the idea that, especially where this parts of this pathway are pretty lengthy, it would be nice to be consistent with the intent of this part of the code to design language that preserves some sort of an aesthetic along that pathway. I don't know if we've done that yet in just saying that the fence, you know, if it's metal or wrought iron, black and brown or accepted colors, the final, it could be white, dark brown, etc. It may mean that we need to go a little farther. I like the idea about the plantings myself. Whose responsibility that is to put them in and whose responsibility is to maintain them is something we probably need to talk about. Is it xeriscaping with just evergreen? I don't know. That's something we probably need to talk about. But my point overall is that I think we ought to be looking at this code based on its original intent, which was aesthetic in nature, and our discussion in writing the code, whatever alterations we come up with, probably ought to keep that in mind. So that we stay true to the intent of the code, and in my opinion, probably we'll arrive at a better place when we finalize what we think this code ought to be. Those are my thoughts.
So what would your recommendation be that I look at as we move forward for these specific segments
of trails? So safety is always an issue that we think about in any kind of development or code we're writing, but I don't think that that ought to be the central focus of what we're talking about in this code. If it was, then we ought to be talking about lighting and shortening lengths of some of these long, you know, alleyway or canyon-like parts of the trail in some way, shape, or form. I don't know how you think of it. So my point is, I think you put safety on the side and approach this from an aesthetic standpoint. I think the types of fencing that we're going to allow, and then maybe a little bit of research into the planting idea. Do we have any neighboring jurisdictions that have a similar set of requirements? And then we probably need to talk around, you know, what shape do we want that to take in our code.
Can I share some thoughts on that? I mean, if you're gonna allow a privacy fence on these segments of trail, then the planting is on the city side of the fence,
right? Agree with that.
Because at that point, as long as it's legal, who cares if they plant in their backyard? Because we can't see it. So it becomes what's being planted on the city side. With the big push at the state to reduce cities' water consumption, how we go about that becomes a challenge. Then are we doing large areas of xeriscape? Are we creating a xeriscape walk? Because I like the idea, in a perfect world where I have the budget to do all these plantings, I like the idea of planting a nice green walkway with nice plants, but in practicality, the delivery might be very different than what you imagine it to be.
That's why I mentioned xeriscaping and everything.
Yeah.
Some low.
So, yeah.
Those
got to be the two things we look at. If we're looking at aesthetics as a low impact, it's got to be low impact, low maintenance. I mean, because we're now doing this ourselves in house, and the more time they spend picking little weeds out of the flower beds or having to run around trees is time not spent mowing parks.
And maybe it's for, you know, there were a couple lights there. I'm thinking of the longer lengths that might introduce landscaping or some kind. The shorter ones, I'm not as concerned about. You know what I'm saying? What you're looking down
between Sunset and Harmony Park is that one long space.
It's over 1,000 feet, right?
Where it's really long, you know, if there were nodes along this long pathway.
I'm wondering if we can increase the length of these specific segments that look specifically called greater than.
Right.
So take it from 130 feet to just have a 250 or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. It seems like those are the parts, those were bothering me more than the short segments.
It seems to be written now that if they request it, then we can approve it if we like it. I mean, it seems very subjective.
As well as rewritten here, right?
If you want a privacy fence, 6 feet tall, you can have one. You just have to ask for it.
Which, why have to ask that?
Right, exactly. If it's allowed, then it's allowed. It's disallowed, then there has to be a reason.
Can I add a footnote to what you're saying? Is the old code is written as the Planning Commission gives the conditional use permit based on
practicalities
and best practice in the state. Most conditional use permits should be done administratively, not through the Planning Commission or the City Council. I mean, imagine going to the city to apply for a fence and be like, well, you just missed the Planning Commission meeting, so you have to wait another month to put in a final fence. And that's government at its best, right? So that's why you'll see some of those changes reflected in the code to bring this back to be an administrative approval, because I think that's best practice.
I wasn't here for the last discussion of this, and I as much as people are worried about seeing a long plain fence that they can't see through and is very tall for 1,000 feet, that's a problem. Like, if you want to have a fence and a private backyard, have one. As long as it's somewhat normal materials and it's in code that it's allowed, I don't have any problem allowing a 6 foot privacy fence.
Here's why.
Along the whole 1,000 feet.
This is why I disagree slightly. And I touched on this last time, I'll say it. These people knew or should have known what the ordinance was in the law. So then to come and complain after the fact is, it's not a matter of property rights. This is not a taking. This does not rise to the level of a taking. So basically, this is an accommodation for a select group of people versus the aesthetic qualities that were underlying principle of the code to begin with. So if we're going to make accommodations every time someone buys a house and doesn't like the way it's zoned or the way the ordinance affects them, then you're open to paying the cost.
And that's what I'm saying. I mean, if we're going to allow a 6 foot privacy fence, then we just say we can do that. You can retrofit it to the way you want it, as long as it fits these materials criteria. And if you want a privacy fence, great. If you want to be 6 foot tall or you want to be 4 foot tall, it's great. I mean, as long as those fit in the criteria, go for it.
If you want to rewrite the criteria.
Yeah, and I think that's true.
I do think that there are some circumstances that have arisen that a homeowner could not foresee when they buy this property and knowing that they're going to put a fence here. And those are the incidences of other dogs coming into their yard or, you know, having the dogs attack their animals.
Oh, there's some jumpers out there. Well, 4 foot fence isn't going to stop.
But you can have a 6 foot.
I think you could call that a legitimate safety issue.
You could have a 6 foot non-privacy. If the dogs are their concern, you can stop a dog with a 6 foot long fence. So I'm not buying the dog issue. This is about privacy, other factors.
And I think that's a legitimate concern too.
I for some I'm sure it is. All I'm saying is they knew what they're getting into. And so I think you have to weigh that versus the overall public policy of what do we want trails to be.
Have there been specific applications about this?
No. In fact, there's not really.
Are there any grumblings under
that
outside
would be,
of the channels?
No. No. This is just honestly this comes about because we walk around the city and we see a deficiency in the code where we have a set of code And then we look at the application of how it's being handled. And you end up with, yeah, I have an open fence in my backyard, but I've put a 6-foot retaining wall behind it so that you can't see. So the application isn't meeting the intent.
That's pretty clever, to be honest.
Well, it's costly.
I think because of the way the code is written currently, we're not under obligation to grant them what they're asking. But I think, in my opinion, I think it's a good thing for us to do to readdress this problem. You know,
I don't think the intent of the code, as Joyce says, was to provide this aesthetic. However, what I think would happen is that it become like a blue crater. And so I just kind of think that's something that what an unintended effect of what's happened to the code.
One of the things I'd like to add too, and this is just my personal opinion, comment is once Harvey Park becomes accessible, that trail, I believe that that trail is going to be fairly quite
Oh, yeah. I think it's heavily used already.
It seems like a perfect role to take that long piece of trail. We allow the residents to put privacy fencing. And we have all the money we need to go in there and create landscape nodes along that pathway so that we preserve the aesthetic that we like for, you know, a larger community and we need the ones.
Beautiful alpine scenery, pressed concrete, you know.
It doesn't cost any water.
Yeah, I mean, that's perfect water.
So we're talking about
what color was the sky there?
Cut it.
So I just wanted to show you a few more fences that do not fall under this.
So the one on the near Jared's house, that's a 6-foot non-see-through wooden fence, right?
But the elevation's a lot different because of the topography. If you go back to the slide, you'll see that the.
Right here. That's a 6-foot.
Should have seen this before. That's not 6 foot from grade because the trail drops off.
So it's probably what, 4.5 foot, 10 foot?
No, it's a 6 foot on top of probably another 4 or 5 feet landscaped.
Even you can see over to Zoe's side. Go tall. Which.
I get the
that one's short enough. That's not going to be.
This one hardly even meets the definition of a trail.
Right.
It's more of a walkway between streets, if we're being completely honest. It's part of the trail system, though. I do need to add that.
I mean, I think if we're talking about aesthetic, I would rather have, you know, a tall privacy fence that has some kind of, you know, architectural accents or something to it to split it up, rather than a basketball court and a retaining wall and a chicken wire and some lattice work, and you know, I mean, I'd rather have something that's uniform and non-see-through than all of these crazy things that are there now if we're really going to change or enforce or whatever.
Well, the predominant on that particular trail, on Forest Street Trail between Harvey and Sunset, is a white line. That's the predominant on that section. Other sections are as well. So this particular area is from Sunset Drive, and this goes up to Heritage Park. But this wouldn't fall under the category. There's probably one or two fences along this whole section.
Yeah.
Why most of them are?
Why doesn't this fall under the category?
It's wider.
Because it's the widest. There's the narrowest point is about 8.7 feet.
Yeah. And this, again, I walked this way, and that one never feels narrow.
Yeah.
There's a couple places where it pinches because the trees are something almost.
Because the trees are thick and it doesn't
But it's different.
But the trail corridor is still wide because it includes the creek area.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
And that measurement's taken for property line to property line.
Yeah.
So, as you can see, when you come from, let's see, right here is the Cedar Hills Drive here, and this is Forest Creek Trail, this is Cottonwood Drive. The narrowest point at this point is as you exit, and it's about 40 feet. So, like I say, these aren't one of the main concerns or the problem, but the complaints that come in. Like I say, it goes back to that first area that we spoke of. The other thing I wanted to show you is, you know, you go with the intent of the code and how we want to be uniform and whatnot. I want to show you a variation of what we've already got around the city. So this is along the major streets. This is open style fence, which you can see along Canyon Road here. These are more uniform as you go along Canyon Road. But if you go on the other side of Canyon Road, on this side, it's a rock wall and a vinyl fence. So you're not meeting the intent of that code just straight down Canyon Road either. Here's another section. So most of these are more pertaining to the east side of the road. This is, Clubhouse Drive. And if I wanted to show you parks, particularly this is Mesquite Park. This is a concrete fence on the south side of Mesquite Park. But then if you go on the north side of Mesquite Park, you get a chain link fence. And this is where it becomes problematic because nothing meets that. This particular fence is on the south side of Sunset Park. But what I particularly like about this one is the vegetation that they planted along that. This is along Bonneville Shore Trail Line. They've got a variety of fences. They've got open, go down further, it's a vinyl fence. See this one as well. And then this is coming off the Burdock Trail. This particular one, these fences have been in there for a very long time. This is a chain link fence with fabric. This is a vinyl fence. And as you walk through the trail.
And that's a solid vinyl fence. It's a privacy fence, yes.
But we.
On this one?
Yeah.
This is a solid vinyl privacy fence. This is a chain link.
But you're more than 30 feet there, so.
Oh, yeah. Much more than 30 feet. But you don't meet that 30-foot width criteria. But this kind of gives you an idea of a montage of different fences as you walk along this bridge. So this is coming up on, I think that's 4,500.
What's the height
from that one? This is a 6-foot fence. This is basically Temple Shadows.
So the only place we can have consistency is where you've got 80 lanes. So a governing body essentially stepped in and built the fence.
Yeah, it would technically be in their CCNRs or in their development agreement where they originally built it and they built the homes inside the station.
Yeah, you've got just thinking, you know, perfect world. We would step in on two long areas. We would build a consistent fence on both sides, you know, with permission from the residents, I guess, or on city property. We would do some sort of xeriscaping with landscape nodes along the way, sort of putting trees all the way along there. And we would preserve the aesthetic, and we would created an environment where the residents had essentially 6-foot privacy fence. And there you go. I'm not suggesting we do that, or that we have the money to do that. Just sometimes it helps to just say, boy, we could wipe the slate clean. In this particular instance, what would we want to approach here?
I'm going to defer this to Chandler because I don't know if that's realistic that we can do that.
I'm not even suggesting that it is.
We can do that. I just don't want to pay for it.
Exactly. But sometimes it helps. As you can form ideas, to say, well, if we're all what we would do, then you can start to talk about how do we get there. Because the other problem, if we put it on the resident's side, you're not going to get consistency in fencing. You're probably not going to get consistency in requests for the fencing. So you're going to have one resident who feels strongly about it, another one who doesn't care or just moved in, and 2 years are going to go by before they think it's an issue. So this notion of consistency or anything like that is going to vary based on the residents. So, you know, our initial approach is writing a code that allows the residents who feel strong about it to request, or even just to, without request.
Well, this is where it would then go to an appeal authority, is where Chandler was looking at. Where does this go to? What appeal authority? Would this go to planning commission? Would this go to city council?
It would be, if it fits the 6 foot privacy criteria that the zoning administration says, yeah. Materials are right, that's allowed. I mean, I think that's an application for geologic or whatever it is to do that and done.
Yeah, for fencing applications, there's not much.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's just that if you'd like a privacy fence, then.
So there is some verbiage because I have come up with people that are not happy with the decisions when they don't fit the criteria. One of the things
where they can feel it, so
basically down in the notes, I've added under the general exceptions, it says, where in the opinion of the administrator, a proposed fence or wall does not conform with the above criteria, he or she shall refer the application to the planning commission or city council for action. Any applicant agreed by the decision may appeal said decision to, and then it would go to appeal authority, who shall have the authority to reverse, confirm, or modify any decision from the
adjustment board.
If they're appealing a decision from myself or from the planning commission, it would go to the board of adjustment. If they're appealing a decision made by the city council, it would have to go through, my guess is, the district court.
So appeal authority covers both
fences. Right.
Yeah. I mean, is this like for somebody that wants to do a sandbag fence or something? I mean, is that what we're talking about?
No, because a sandbag fence is temporary. Depends on the people. No, just in general, that's how appeals work.
So taking this back, as we go back forward on this, I want to make sure that I'm covering the basis that you wish me to cover. One of the things would be the aesthetics. Yes, definitely the aesthetics. The other would be the lighting of the crowd. We would call that out in greater than in the world. Possibly add plants, types of xeriscaping, more conformity to these longer lengths of the trail. Is that correct?
I think the width is more important than the length.
The width?
Yeah.
Well, I think if it's above 30 feet,
yeah,
we're allowing everything.
It's the narrow portions.
If you're talking narrow portions that are longer than, I'm just throwing out 200 feet, how many are there on that map? Are we down just the one?
No. Every one of those, let's see.
There's five sections.
Five sections.
So you'd have to shorten that length in order to start excluding them. So you'd have to go from 130 feet down to 100 feet, and then maybe you're down to two trail segments.
Now you have to make them longer, right?
No, because if they're longer and wider, narrow, then this applies. If you make them shorter and narrow, then more of them become excluded from these requirements.
Because it doesn't have to be 30 feet for the entire length. You're saying anywhere on that length that there's 30 feet?
Yes. And even then, the length of trail is very hard to decide upon because it curves, it moves. I mean, we're guessing on segments. I could tell you segments of road because there's intersection to intersection, but sure. But trails,
where does it stop?
Is,
where does it end?
Where does the length of trail end? So I'm inclined to lean more towards what Jared has said, and that the width matters more than the depth here.
So one of the areas that this would fit, since you put under 20 feet, this would have met the one over by 4600 West going out to the Murdoch Trail and then Harvey Boulevard. Those would be the major ones that it would affect.
Why would you even have to have a length? Why couldn't you just define this by if the width of the trail that you're concerned about, household A, if your trail width in your backyard is 30 feet or less, these are.
Okay.
That makes sense to me.
What I'm saying is that this would be problematic for that particular area there on 4600.
Yeah. I think we're acknowledging that. We're still identifying those segments as possibly needing to be addressed in some manner. How that is, I don't know what that looks like. In the perfect world, I know what it looks like, but in our fallen world, I don't.
Thank you. We'll close item 6. We'll go on to our last item 7. Discussion on permitted traditional uses in the S1 North Carolina.
So imagine, just picture the Cedar Canyon development, and I want you to picture that commercial piece of apartment, right? It's there on the corner of 4700 West and Cedar Hills Drive. There's that portion that's going to be undeveloped. They've boxed it off with the fence now, and it's still a portion, right? That piece there is in our mixed-use sub-district of the commercial zone. I had a colleague today from the speculator who was curious about putting a drink shop, not a square, Starbucks, one piece. And while this is a great place for all the other code, it does not allow the drive-throughs on a piece. So the question is I think that that's an appropriate use of that parcel. So I would like the Planning Commission to consider modifying the conditional and permitted uses in the code to allow for those types of drive-throughs on that piece, to allow for that development to happen, or any development to happen. There's two inquiries we've got for this type of drive-through restaurant and also for a car wash. I think even though they have drive-throughs, they're similar, but they're different on some levels. So that in your use packet, there's 5813 of the drive-through and fast food restaurants. You see on the middle column there, that's the mixed use retail district. There is no reflective length, which means it's prohibited. Then the same thing with 64-16 auto washing is also reflective length. There's a specific exterior reflective length. It's
and we did change the code to allow for bay doors to be facing if there's an auto type business. Yes?
Yeah, for the oil change. So that would be
oil change, car wash, whatever the case would be.
Yeah.
Before there were bay doors were strictly prohibited.
Yeah, but in all practicality, that allowed for these uses, it did allow
for these uses.
So this is a discussion because this came up a week ago, and I want to just put this on your radar, and I'm going to make some changes to this for the next meeting. We'll have a public hearing, we won't go through the process, but I do want this to be something to think about. Also, I mean, as you go through this, I would look at the whole list and say, do I see anything else on this list that maybe is too long? Any questions for
me? This is just a discussion, right?
Yeah, just a discussion.
Maybe not really a question, but a comment. Given the high-density residential that's plunked right in there. Throwing a Starbucks in there is probably really not what they were signing up for. People are signing up for is they're buying those lots.
There's not a lot there.
There's fence.
Having said that, there's great fence and there's
no. I see what you're saying here. But similar to your neighborhood, when you bought your house, the other side of the fence was commercial, right? What?
Not when I bought mine.
Not when she bought her home. When I bought mine, yes.
It was commercial, and I mean that you don't know what's going to go in that parcel, so.
Okay.
And it's America.
So I don't disagree with anything you said, but the applicant would have the ability to request a zone change, correct?
Sure.
So, I mean, in instances where we're trying to prognosticate, you know, what someone might want to do, they actually have the ability themselves to make specific application.
They do. You're right. This is just one where I saw it and I thought, might make sense to change. Jump ahead of it a little bit, and if that's the type of business that they're going after, rather than having a conversation with them and possibly killing it in prospect of saying, hey, yeah, it's not permitted, but I'm willing to have that conversation with the planning commission, that's what I have to say right now, rather than to say, you're changing something with the planning commission and city council. So, I mean, that any drive there, any commercial, wouldn't feed directly into the neighborhood. They would obviously feed on 47 where the city goes from. Yeah, 47. So the impact would be similar to the
group. I think that the amount of traffic that we're seeing in Taco Bell, another drink place would triple that.
Probably just into the market with several of them. But I don't have an application, so I'm just saying, like, whatever it is that goes there, I think that you probably have to have a conversation about our conditional uses and prevented uses on it.
You just try to remove one obstacle before.
Thank you, Jeff.
So I've noticed that now that cross street could continue on into the Walmart parking lot, right? That there's been a significant increase in traffic and people doing funny things right there, and it's, you know, cutting across and pulling in front of people and like putting a drive through right there would exacerbate that significantly, I think.
So then what use can you put there that is?
I'm not saying that we can't do it. I think that there needs to be some kind of traffic mitigation.
We're already looking into that. It's changing some traffic patterns on Cedar Hills Drive as it approaches North County Boulevard and then that intersection with Boulevard across the sort of place. I'm already looking into that. And I don't engage with traffic engineers to plus some of those efficiencies there. But, I mean, to be frank, what I'm kind of hearing is you want a low use, low impact use there. Offices aren't clamoring to be here.
No, I'm not necessarily.
Unless you want three more dentists there.
No, what I'm saying is that there are some traffic issues,
yes,
popping their heads up, and if we don't handle those and we put a high traffic use there, then we're going to have accidents there.
Yep.
And then nobody's going to get anything.
No, I agree. So where are you worried about?
But that's my concern about that. It's not that we shouldn't put that there. If you want to get a drink, I've already seen a change in the traffic pattern in the last 3 weeks.
A lot of big. Well, and then it'll also help because as that punches through 47 down to 9900, you're going to see further changes. And then as the Harvey Light comes in on the east-west corridor, you're going to see some of that traffic head that way to get out of Cedar Hills rather than everything choke point on the Cedar Hills drive.
True.
So there are things in the mix that are coming back to Park Williams that I think alleviate some of that traffic congestion. Because if you're heading west, then your best bet is to go on Harvey. Because that's where your west corridor is going to be. It's not going to be on Cedar Hills drive.
And it's just, there's going to be a little bit of road when you get there.
Yep. vote or disagree. Then, in light of that discussion, I would suggest maybe thinking about that piece in particular and saying, what do I envision that piece as? What uses?
We kind of suggested for both ones. I don't think they're a problem as long as the traffic impact can be.
Well, whatever's there, people are going to be coming to the meeting, so I'm
sure.
Will ingress and egress be on Cedar Hills or?
Of course, yes.
So,
I don't know. That a lot. You're looking at the ingress egress is too close. The 47 West access point is too close to anything they can put in, so it's got to come in on 47. Something to consider.
Yeah, so let's kind of do a motion to the game.
So moved.
I will second.
Okay, I'll be right.